How's it going? Thank you for checking in, and thank you for helping the exponential growth of our podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. With the NBA playoffs around the corner, time to check in with NBA insider Bill Herrenda with a look at the NBA postseason, plus his postseason awards. And this is the same man who made his network TV debut on an episode of SWAT, so what's going on next with him? Without further ado, let's get to it with Bill Herrenda. Now, before we get to the NBA stuff, you had the great experience of being a part of the NCAA tournament with your brother, Fairleigh Dickinson, and following around Greg. What was that like?
Dave, you know, it was a great refresher on the human side of the game. And the players, their families, coaching staff, the administration, the alumni, the support, the training staff, how it's, you know, such a team effort for individuals and teams to be successful. So it was a great reminder of what it takes. And also it brought flashbacks to me, of course, of UMass Lowell and what that experience was like back in the day. So it was great. I just have tremendous respect for Greg and his staff and what they were able to do. And certainly the kids themselves who fought through, you know, some of the things that don't get the hype, the injuries, balancing the academics and the families and all of those things. So it was great. It was fantastic. And of course, as you know, my oldest daughter, Bridget, is back east, had the opportunity to spend some quality time with her, as well as Greg and his family and the team. And then we were all able to reconvene as a family out in Salt Lake City. So it was really a magical time. It was absolutely terrific to go from Jersey to Loretto, Pennsylvania, to the conference championship game, to Dayton, and then ultimately to Salt Lake.
At what point did you know your brother would eventually be a coach? And did you think about doing it at that level?
Yeah, you know, Dave, pretty early on, Greg played, you know, at St. Peter's Prep and then at Merrimack. And I think he had made up his mind at Merrimack College that he wanted to coach. And so it was no surprise whatsoever that he got into the profession. As far as me, you know, it kind of like I was pretty burned out when I finished playing, and I wasn't ready for coaching at that point in time. I did help out at my high school at St. Peter's Prep after I graduated from UMass Lowell. I helped out a little bit there, but it never really materialized into a career. But then all of a sudden the broadcasting thing popped. So I always kind of feel like, you know, when coaching was ready for me, I wasn't ready. And then maybe when, you know, I was ready for it, it just wasn't the right time. So never say never, but the stars just never seem to align from a timing standpoint for it to really really click and work with me.
The parts of the job that are appealing, the practices and the games, but to me, that recruiting part of it, that component is the thing that would be most challenging and the most distasteful. I guess if I had to pick the one thing about, you know, college coaching that would be, you know, kind of a thumbs down.
Well, you know what, Dave, it's true. And, you know, we have many friends in the profession that morphed, you know, from college to the NBA, like Steve Clifford, who's currently doing an amazing job with the Orlando Magic, and Tom Thibodeau, guys like that, Jim Todd, who was a longtime assistant coach, was the head coach of the Clippers for a while. So those guys, I would guess they would say that, yes, you know, recruiting is the one thing that they don't miss from, you know, while being in the NBA, of course. So it's all part of it, and it certainly is a challenge. And we've seen, you know, at the highest level, some of the transgressions and improprieties in the game, and it's very imperfect. But if you're going to be a college coach, I think that's the aspect of it that you've really got to embrace. And also, as the game has changed, it's not only recruiting, but also retaining. And the transfer rate is sky high. So you've got to be nimble, pliable, and flexible with your roster as it's likely to change. And certainly that depends upon what level you're at.
I was just thinking about one more thing about your brother. He's also a talk show host too, right?
Yes, Dave. He has his own show on WFDU. I've been a guest multiple times. And he's had everybody from, you know, Dick Vike, Tal, to Bill Cowher. He's really run the gamut sports-wise as far as guests go. So he is very garrulous, has the gift of gab. And, you know, it was funny. He was on doing the media circuit this time, revisiting some of the media folks that he visited with 2 years ago, because a couple of years ago, because they've made the tournament for the second time in 4 years. And I think he even secured Jim Rome as a guest while he was a guest on Jim Rome show. So it's something that he really enjoys a lot.
Obviously, it's a gift that's in the genes, right?
I guess so. There's something about surviving New Jersey, and I think you have to be somewhat of a diplomat to do that. So it's certainly, I agree, perhaps it's in the genes.
Hey, you're good at it. Let's go to the pros. We'll go east to west then. Milwaukee, the best record in the league. They're 3 wins away from 60. They might have the first guy to be the MVP on a team with the best record in Milwaukee since Kareem back in 1974. Are the Bucks the team to beat coming out of the East?
You know, Dave, I would have to say so. I think that, you know, listen, they've been top five in offensive and defensive rating virtually all season long. I think they've done a terrific job personnel-wise, even with guys like George Hill, because they've faced some injuries and been able to, you know, sustain throughout the season. So at the present time, I would say that, yes, the Bucks are the team to beat. And, you know, it's interesting because I've got, you know, my awards postseason, or I should say, you know, NBA awards. And I would have to go with Budenholzer as coach of the year. Some of my selections may be somewhat contradictory, but I would say that certainly right now the team to beat coming out of the East would have to be Milwaukee the way they're playing.
And playing, I guess, on paper, Toronto in the conference finals?
I would think so, Dave. I would definitely think so. And, you know, what a job Nick Nurse has done there, and what a difference maker Kawhi Leonard is. And it'll be interesting to see him, of course, in the playoffs. What a terrific two-way player that he is. So I would have a hard time seeing a breakthrough. You know, one of the things that certainly is a caveat when looking at the playoff teams and their ability to do damage. You know, UB Brown always talks about what is your record against the 500 and above. And if you look at Milwaukee, they're 27-11. Toronto is 26-17, 27-19. Philadelphia. Then it gets a little thin. Boston's 23-20. Indiana's under 500 at 17-19, and no one else in the Eastern Conference is above 500 with their record versus 500 and above.
And you've been on Pascal Siakam for years. I know we were doing games on TV, and he was at New Mexico State, and you were, you know, raving about him. And he very well could be, in fact, maybe I'm tipping off, but your most improved player of the year.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more with his improvement. However, I do have D'Angelo Russell of the Nets as most improved. A couple of Sacramento Kings and De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, even Montrezl Harrell with the Clippers. But I would probably go with D'Angelo Russell. But Siakam has been terrific. And this is a guy that the game kind of came late to him. And even working New Mexico this season, and his head coach, Paul Weir, who was at New Mexico State, he's been at New Mexico the last couple of years, just raves about Siakam and about his work ethic, how focused he was very disciplined, and really lauds him and says no one deserves this adulation more than Pascal does. So, yeah, he has just been absolutely fantastic. What a season he's had for the Raptors.
And your most improved player, Russell, it's great for him as a reclamation project. Not that he was never a good player, but he had the image coming out of L.A., not perceived as a leader, ratting out his teammates with, you know, cameras and videos and things like that. So he's turned his career around and has become a legitimate star in the league.
Yeah, Kenny Atkinson, I give him a lot of credit. One of my candidates for Coach of the Year. And I think there, Dave, as we know, point guard is probably the toughest position to acclimate to in the NBA. And it seemed as though it was a very precarious line that Russell played with, in that at crunch time, he's now been able to rein in the turnovers. He's actually been able to just explode and take over games. And it's funny how NBA scouts will look at dominance at your position, prospectively and the ability to take over games, and he's been able to do it at the highest level. And I think we all know that Kenny Atkinson is a terrific player development coach and a great overall coach, and the job he and his staff have done there has been absolutely fantastic. They, along with Denver, were my two sleeper teams heading into the season. But I really think that Atkinson's ability to manage D'Angelo Russell, to get the best out of him, to not crush him when he's down, when he's making turnovers, but to elevate his game has been absolutely absolutely sensational and a great thing to watch this season.
Brooklyn, either 6 through 8 or even out of the playoffs, is there a team in the East that can pull off a first-round upset?
Well, you know what, David, it's a good question. You know, I like Orlando a lot, but if, you know, they're the 8 seed, they're not going to upset Milwaukee. And even Brooklyn, the way they've played, you know, the one thing about Brooklyn, and if the season ended today, they would be 7, they'd have Toronto. The way they play that zone, I just don't see over 7 games, you know, the Nets having the ability to knock off the Raptors. So I would be pressed to find an upset, but I think some of those series could go deeper than you'd expect. And, you know, listen, would it really be an upset if Indiana defeated Boston, right, if the Pacers finished at 5, the Celtics at 4? I don't think many people would cite that as a major upset. So I think it would be tough for the lower-level playoff teams in the East to pull off an upset over the Bucks or the Raptors or even the Sixers.
And in the West, is there a team other than perhaps Houston that can give Golden State a challenge?
Oof. Yeah. You know, Dave, timing is everything. And I really like the way Denver played for a large duration of the season. So I'll stick with Houston, as you said, potentially giving the Warriors a run. I'll say that maybe in a 7-game series, Michael Malone can galvanize the Nuggets. Maybe they can. I think Portland, of course, with the injury to Nurkic and McCollum status, that certainly, you know, throws a wet blanket on their playoff opportunities. And, you know, I really like the Clippers a lot, but I'm just not sure that they've got enough to challenge the Warriors. And of course, OKC has kind of, you know, stumbled, particularly lately defensively, and I'm not sure the Spurs have enough. So I would say definitely Houston, and perhaps my dark horse would be the Denver Nuggets.
And certainly a Warriors playing at a high level at the right time, and with the addition of Cousins, and he's playing at a very high level, really there's no weakness right now.
Yeah, you know what, Dave, at the moment there isn't. And you know, when you look at, again, referencing UB Brown, you know, one of the things that you look for heading into the playoffs, you want to be injury free. You want your top three to play to their potential, and you need to win close games. And you're right. The way the Warriors particularly have defended lately, I think to me, those are the areas to look at with Golden State. How are they defending, and are they taking care of the basketball? Because the offense is going to take care of itself, and they do look awfully tough right now as they head into the playoffs. They really do.
And you always have to feel sorry for a guy like Curry who doesn't have a lot going on in his life in terms of success. He's been shooting, you know, blind all these years. Now with contact lenses, he can finally see. He can finally shoot and perform at a higher level. What a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's unbelievable. I mean, you just run out of superlatives for these guys. And, you know, just their ability, Dave, to keep it simple, you know, the ball movement, the people movement, you know, on the weak side of the floor, the back screens, the staggered screens, the flare screens, you know, they're so tough to defend. And I think even when you throw a player like Cousins in the mix with his ability to shoot the three, to pass the ball, when they signed him, I tweeted out that he could be the best passer on their roster. They're so beautiful in their simplicity. Now, I think one of the things that you've got to watch, particularly with Cousins, is his personality and how he tends to thrive on this friction and this tension. You know what I mean? And the waving or the looking for Jokic after the game the other night. You know, how does he react in a feral environment on the road? Draymond Green, of course, I love his fire and desire, and I've said this frequently. The meek may inherit the earth, but they're not going to win the championship. So I think you need players that have an edge. But certainly, I think the point that I'm getting to is are the only people that can beat the Warriors themselves. You know what I'm saying? Can you channel that energy the right way heading into the playoffs? And I think that'll be something that'll be fascinating to watch, particularly with Cousins, because he's never played and participated in the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that.
You mentioned playing with the edge and that fire. Do you see more complaining? I mean, maybe you call it fire and being passionate, but this complaining about officiating that seems to be at a much higher level than it's been in recent years. Even guys like Curry, in fact, I think anyone other than Curry, he taunts an official after making a three-pointer in the Minnesota game, and anyone else gets a technical foul, but you know he gets a free pass. But it was a very inflamed environment with the way they're going at the referees.
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed, Dave, to say that it's worse now than it was. You know, like I remember a couple of years ago, or maybe even 10 years ago, it was, you know, really bad. They tried to, you know, change it and put kind of a zero tolerance policy on it. So I would say that one of the things that you've got to recognize is that officiating is extremely difficult. I mean, if you know what I mean, if you're honest with yourself and you watch these games, or if you're in an arena, I mean, listen, there could be a foul every time down the floor. It's extremely difficult to officiate it. And I think from a player's standpoint, you have to just make the adjustment and hope for consistency, right? It's like the weather. If it's hot, you want to wear your shorts. If it's a little chilly, you want to wear your sweater. You need to make those adjustments. And I think that, you know, even going back to some sports psychology and positive coaching alliance stuff, you know, you have to recognize that you have to have a self-control routine. You know what I mean? You cannot be surprised in the playoffs when a call does not go your way. You know what I'm saying? You've got to be ready for that and act accordingly. I think it's just one of these things that will continue to evolve, and I don't think that there's any real tried and true solution for it. But I just think from all aspects, from coaches to players to referees, all you can hope for is consistency and also just trying to find that mutual respect, because we need officials. You know, they're a vital part of the game. These guys and gals work so hard, they get very little adulation. And I think that sometimes you've got to, I know it's tough in the heat of the moment, but you've got to take a step back and recognize that, you know, this is all, you know, truly a privilege to be participating in the sport. And you got to dig deep down to try to find that mutual respect.
Can you think of a time where a call was changed because somebody was complaining about it?
No, maybe yeah, Tommy Parker at maybe Tommy Parker at 79th Street and Kennedy Boulevard back in Jersey, but never in an organized fashion. So your point is well taken, Dave. Yeah, it's not going to change it. But again, and also, you know what I find interesting too is, you know, the old adage that in the NBA, if you don't like a call, just wait because you're going to get the next one. And I think that, you know, sometimes I find it interesting to watch young players and their responses to the officiating, because I think sometimes older players kind of understand that a guy may readily admit, like, listen, I just blew that call. And then, you know, they have the ability to kind of move on. So I find it interesting to kind of watch younger players versus the veterans and how they handle the officiating.
NBA contributor Bill Herendo with us. Hey, let's get to your postseason awards. You kind of hinted at it earlier. So let's start off with your MVP. And then obviously it's down to two, Giannis or Harden?
Yeah, I've got Harden there, Dave, just because the way that he has been really the glue and has held that together, particularly during their turbulent times and when they faced so many injuries and the rocky start. So that's my choice there. I know it's tough. I know you can make a case for Giannis. Coach of the year, I've got Budenholzer, as I mentioned. Most improved, D'Angelo Russell. Defensive player of the year, I've got Klay Thompson with Rudy Gobert and Embiid close.
Wow, okay.
Six man, Lou Williams. And then rookie of the year, big props to DeAndre Ayton, Trae Young, and Marvin Bagley, but I've got Luka Doncic there.
Even with the late push by Trae Young?
Yeah, I still do, Dave. Yeah, I still do. I think Young has been terrific. And a lot of this, listen, it's a steak or lobster argument. But I just think that, you know, Doncic, you know, you can look at the numbers and take a look at that. And, of course, you know, you can make a case for many players. And, you know, I'm not, like, look, Doncic is averaging 21 points, Young 19. I'm not going to get to that fine-tooth comb, but just to me, if I had to pick a guy, one rookie to be on my team, it would be Doncic.
In fact, you look at the first month of the season, you thought you were seeing the second coming of Larry Bird. You're watching him play at such a young age.
Yeah, and you know what, David, in a similar fashion, I never put a ceiling on what anyone can accomplish, right? I mean, you know, just look at Sacramento and what a great sophomore year De'Aaron Fox has had and what a career year Buddy Hield can have. So their questions moving forward are going to be, you know, and Bagley has been terrific for them. Can they sustain it? You know what I mean? Or, you know, for Bagley, of course, can he improve? How much can he improve? But for some of these guys, I would say that the ceiling is quite high, you know, from Trae Young to Sexton, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to watch them develop and see where their careers take them.
I know there's the kid out of the Clippers. He's not going to be a rookie of the year, but he's a guy that's certainly making some noise in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, a role player scoring 10 a game, tremendous upside and a bright future.
Yeah, I really like him a lot. And, you know, David, it seemed as though he just kind of walked in and contributed, you know, right away there. So, yeah, he's been terrific. And like you said, you know, his stats have been kind of modest. But, I'm really sanguine on his ability to be a terrific player in the league. And then he's got some great guys to learn from as well, you know, in Lou Williams. And, you know, I think it's also been interesting for the Clippers just with Doc Rivers and his ability to coach. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago that people were like, hey, you know, is this the end for Doc in L.A.? And obviously they've gone through a major overhaul and maintained their playoff status. They just kind of took it as far as they could with the big three, right, of Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Ayton. And now in this DeAndre Jordan. And this ability now to kind of recalibrate has been really fun to watch, and he's been terrific as a rookie.
Yeah, with a lot of good young players too. Landry Shamet coming over from Philadelphia, Zubac from the Lakers. So certainly a group trending upwards with a lot of young players.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you got to give Lawrence Frank a ton of credit there with what they've been able to do. And we'll see what happens in free agency, right? As it looks as though, you know, it could be Brooklyn, the Knicks, the Lakers and Clippers being teams that have cap space, and how good can they lure players to their respective franchises. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out during the offseason.
Hey, Bill, last time I talked to you, you had just stolen a bunch of scenes from Shamar Moore and pretty much owned an episode of SWAT and had become an internet sensation. How has your life changed since making your network TV debut?
Oh, you know what, Dave? I'm a very lucky guy. I don't think my life has changed all that much. That was a great experience. It was a lot of fun. You know, one of the things that I was in a movie called Spring Breakaway. It's on the internet, and it was produced by Brat is the name, B-R-A-T is the name of that channel. So I play a minister in that. It's got just about 2.7 million views on YouTube. So it's been a really successful teen movie. My role is a very small one, but you know, like anything else, I think it's just a process and you know, just kind of following the ball, if you will, of life and auditions and what have you. So we'll see what's next. But it was, you know, certainly a lot of fun, and you know, it was really nice that you know, there were a lot of folks that you know, kind of reached out and really enjoyed that episode of SWAT. It was tremendous. It was really a lot of fun.
Hey, well, tell me about this movie then, and your role as a priest. You said, right?
Yeah, well, just a minister. Dave, okay. But listen, I could probably play a priest, rabbi, imam. You know, I'm
you're versatile.
Yeah, that's right. I'm ready for anything. But no, you know, not really much to it beyond, you know, I guess timing, opportunity, fit, and all those things. So it's just been kind of fun to, you know, again, see where the different paths are. To different opportunities and finding, you know, the right fit based upon casting and directors and producers and their needs relative to some of the roles that may be, you know, better fits. So it was a lot of fun to work with in that particular movie, and that was another really fun experience.
If you could be in any movie or TV show, you would like to act with whom?
Wow. You know what? That's a great question. Now, if you had asked me that in a timeless way, I mean, maybe the Honeymooners and Jackie Gleason,
right,
and Art Carney, you know, say if it was wide open. But you know what? I don't really know what would be like, what would be top. You know, it's not like I have a, you know, like we went through kind of like the list of the postseason awards for the NBA. It's not like I have like a list of, okay, I'd like to be in this, I'd like to do that. I'm more focused on really just trying to get better and just produce quality work wherever that may be. And that starts really with auditions, because, you know, obviously you're going to do many more auditions and stuff that you're going to book. So I'm almost like just kind of using that as my guide. Like, hey, am I getting better? Is the quality of work consistent? And then as far as booking work and what have you, I'm just kind of letting that take care of itself.
I always talk to actors about this, the part of auditioning, because, you know, you're putting yourself out there and the odds are always against you when you walk into that room. To deal with that part of it, like sales, where you're dealing with a certain amount of rejection before you achieve any success.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, it's funny because I have a vast amount of experience in sales as well. And I think the rejection is something that you have to deal with in a very positive way. It's like, you know, you may have done a fine job, but maybe you're just not the best fit. And I think that it's about the recognition of, with auditioning, that, hey, that's your, and I think it may have been Bryan Cranston I saw talk about this, or Al Pacino or another very successful actor, where they talk about like, hey, that's your 5 minutes, you know, like that's your work for the day. Like, you do get to act today, and it just happens to be in the audition. And I think to embrace that is very, very important. So it's almost, again, similar to playing, in that you just got to really enjoy the process and let the outcome take care of itself. You know what I mean? If you're too focused on the outcome, the process may not be there. So I think it's about staying in the moment, enjoying it, doing the best you can, and then letting those things go. And also, we talked about this before in Jenna Fischer's book. You know, I think it's like a 50-to-1 ratio. So if it's a no, you've got to embrace that. Like, hey, we're getting closer to a yes. And again, we all want to work and what have you. But she talks about it quite well in, you know, The Actor's Life, her book, A Survival Guide, that at least, you know, you're moving and making progress even when it is a no. And again, Dave, as you know, you're a successful broadcaster and actor and radio personality. It may not be for this specific role, but these casting people and directors can have a role down the road, or you could go in for something and you can audition for the dad and you end up being the uncle. So you just never know how it's going to turn. So, but you do have to have a thick skin and the ability to bounce back and be resilient. All those good things.
I had some director tell me that most of the people he comes across with in the business fade out because they're in it for the wrong reasons, or doing it just to be famous. They don't do it because they love the craft. And if you love the craft, you'll go for the auditions and you'll get turned down. You'll go back for more and you'll do the little one-line role because you just love being a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's I think that's very, very well said. And also there's just the team aspect of that. And, you know, like just we talked about at FDU, right? From the administration to the alums, to the trainers, to the coaches, to the parents and kids, of course, you know, just that team aspect. And I think that recognizing that you're part of that and part of the system and part of that camaraderie. And just like you said, if you're in it for the right reasons, then you're going to have that staying power, as opposed to, like you said, if you're in it for some reasons that are fleeting or shallow or what have you, that's, that's certainly not going to be a long-term situation. I think everyone really has keen ability to sense that authenticity, and it's very important just to ultimately to be yourself, because that's all you can do at the end of the day, and just be the best that you're capable of being, and let the rest, you know, just kind of fall into place, and you just take it as it comes. That's all you can ever do, really.
I was thinking the same way that Tony Robbins referred to sales. And just for example, you make $1,000 for a sale, but it takes you like 100 doors to knock on. So every time you get turned down, I remember him saying, "Hey, well, thanks for your time. I just made 10 bucks." And the person would be like, "What are you talking about?" "Well, you know, I know it takes 100. So there's number 23. So you give me, you know, 10 bucks. Thanks a lot. See you later." And every now and then someone would want to talk to him. He's like, "Hey, you're some kind of weird. You know, what are you about?" And then maybe get a sale that way. But just look at it big picture. Each time, just like you were saying, you get the no. "Hey, I made 10. I made 10. I made 10. And then over the course of that 100, you've made your 1,000.
Yeah, there you go. And also, Dave, I think that's a great point. I think that there's the learning process along the way, which, you know, I feel as though, you know, being committed to, you know, being a lifelong learner and improving is, I think that's also a lot of fun. So even if you don't book the job, but it's like, okay, well, what did I learn in this particular experience and that I can incorporate into the next one? And this makes me more well-rounded. Those are all things that I think are important. And, you know, it's like the old adage, if you have a job, but you do it the same way all the time and you're not learning, you're not evolving, that's not really a good scene. But if you're, you know, if you're continually evolving and getting better and making yourself as valuable as possible, I think that's really important to keep in mind as well. And also just to be a good listener, you know, that sometimes for me can be a challenge, like to read the fine print, to really understand, you know, the scene or the role or what is necessary to be successful in this particular project. And I think also to have a very healthy inventory of your strengths and weaknesses and recognizing, hey, you know, this may be a good fit, this may be a stretch. And just kind of being honest with yourself, because I think that makes it a little bit easier as well to kind of move on from some of the challenges and the rejection. Just being realistic with what's kind of in your wheelhouse and what could be a little bit of a stretch.
So you think being Zac Efron's younger brother would be a reach?
Oh, by no means. No, absolutely. I think I've got all kinds of range, Dave. But no, maybe, you know what, on second thought, maybe you're right. Maybe that is one that that I probably couldn't pull off. So hey, I thank you, Dave. I thank you for helping me.
Oh, my pleasure. Hey, has there been any eye-opening experiences when you leave an audition like, man, I didn't expect that, where maybe you got caught off guard by something, or maybe that was something that was a learning experience that you didn't expect going in?
Well, you know what? I can't really point to one over another, and you know, I think sometimes it's so random, it's so all over the place that you just never know. You know what I mean? From like the number of people in the room to sometimes how quick they can be. So I don't really have one in particular that like jumps out that was, you know, more striking or surprising than another. But I guess the moral is just to really kind of expect the unexpected and just try to control the variables that you can control, if that makes sense.
Do you feel like this acting experience helps you in other areas of life, whether it's being a better listener, being patient, or enjoying the process? Does it extend into other areas of your life?
Totally. I think a lot of it feels like the culmination of a lot of things. So, you know, whether it's experience as a salesperson or a broadcaster, as a husband or a father, I think it's like all of those things, Dave. You know, like I think you're bringing your entire life experience to it, and then hopefully you are becoming more well-rounded and a better listener, for example. So I think that's the thing that's kind of fascinating about it, is that you almost feel like your entire life experience is preparing you for what's next and whatever is next, and you're better to tackle it, because I kind of feel like you're always drawing from some personal experience that to try to bring your best performance forward. It's very, very interesting that way. And it's also for me, just kind of like, very serendipitous. You know, I don't feel like this has been like planned at all, but just kind of going with the flow. So it's been a lot of fun for sure.
Hey, so that said, would you have been as good at it when you were 30, or would you have had the balls to even try to do it when you were 30?
Yeah. You know, that's like, that's a great question. I really don't know. And like, the only thing that I can say is that I'm here now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm here now, and it's kind of funny because, you know, I almost think back to the ability to coach back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I helped out at St. Peter's Prep after I graduated from UMass Lowell, and, you know, maybe I should have stuck with it. And what would I be doing now if I stayed there then? But, again, that's a I don't want to say a trap, but I think that's something that you can't really dwell on. And you just have to look forward and recognize, hey, here's where I'm at now. This is what I'm doing, and what's next. And I'm going to try to enjoy it and do the best I can with it.
I love that. Living life to the fullest, Bill. You're an inspiration.
Well, no, thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it. Appreciate all your support. And love talking to you on your podcast. I'm really enjoying seeing the guests that you've had and the growth that you've had with all of your pursuits. So it's definitely a mutual admiration society.
You're the best, man. I'll be in touch.
All right, Dave. Sounds good. All the best. Enjoy the Final Four. And I know we'll wrap during the NBA playoffs a little bit more for sure.
Thanks to Bill Herenda, whom you can follow on Twitter at Bill Herenda, H-E-R-E-N-D-A, and BillHerenda.com. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.